This message is a presentation of Pinnacle Baptist Church and the preaching ministry of Pastor Ray McBerry. Other messages like this are available online at pinnaclebaptist.com. The church is located at 2517 High Falls Road in Griffin, Georgia. If you're in the area, we would love for you to visit us this Sunday. Now, here's today's message.
All right, well, we are in chapter 3 for our study here in the book of Judges. What we saw at the end of chapter 2 was a good description of really an overview for the book of Judges, because chapter 2 describes not only the problem, but what Israel's response was to the problem, and of course it was not a good response. God's command was that they should drive out the inhabitants of the land, not allow any of them to remain, that if they would not leave, they were to be exterminated, men, women, and children. As harsh as that sounds, there was a good reason for that. Chapter 2 also gave us the reason for that when the Bible explains that the people in the land were worshiping false gods, and it specifically names two of them, Baal and Ashtoreth. Baal being the male version, the sun god, and Ashtoreth representing the moon goddess. And of course, they go by different names depending on which group of people in the Old Testament we're talking about. But these are the main two deities of the ancient pagan world. And for that reason, God had said, drive them out. Do not allow them to remain. And as long as Joshua was alive, they pretty much did what God had said to do. In fact, when I was doing my studying for this morning, I was looking at Joshua's record of victories versus losses. You know, if you have a baseball pitcher, he's 10-0 or 10-3 or whatever his win-loss record is. Joshua was 31-0. If you look at the Battle of Ai, Israel did suffer a setback the first time they went out onto the field against Ai because of Achan's sin. If you remember the story from the book of Judges, book of Joshua, but then in the very next few verses, Joshua, after they got the sin out of Israel, they overran the city of Ai. So Joshua was 31-0 in victories versus losses in his time as the military leader of Israel. But after the death of Joshua, it all just kind of falls apart. Initially, the tribe of Judah and Simeon along with them continue to take possession of the land and drive out the inhabitants in the southern part of the land. But that's really as far as the success goes. Good morning, brother. Good morning, Miss Carolyn. Even in Judah and Simeon, they didn't totally drive out the inhabitants of the land. And of course, the other 10 tribes were not successful at all to any degree. We saw how the children of Israel, even when they were dominant over the Canaanites, they allowed them to remain in the land and just pay tribute, pay taxes every year to the children of Israel. But of course, that came back to haunt the Israelites because, number one, some of those same people constantly were a thorn in the flesh in one way or the other. And of course, they also led them into idolatry and the worship of false gods. So then the verses 16 through 20 of chapter 2 describe that vicious cycle that Israel fell into, where God blessed them initially, then they became lax in their serving of God. They fell into sin, disobedience, and because of their sin and disobedience, God had to judge them each time. And finally, after God judging them for so much time, they would repent and come to God, begging for deliverance. And when they did, God would send a judge to rid the land of their enemies, and they would go back to the top of the cycle again with prosperity and God's blessings. But it was a vicious cycle that Israel fell into over and over for more than 300 years of history that we see recorded in the book of Judges. So as we go through the book of Judges, this is the cycle we're going to see over and over and over again. So just remember that, log that away, because we're going to see the pattern repeated in every chapter all throughout the book of Judges. One other thing that I will say as we begin our study and looking at the first judge who's mentioned by name in the book of Judges is that the first judge we're going to see this morning, he's the best judge we're going to see in the book. It only goes downhill from there. So this first judge is going to be a godly man, a good man, but the judges, even the judges of Israel that God uses to deliver his people, even their character is going to go downhill and downhill till we get to the end of the book, and our final judge, per se, in the book of Judges is Samson. We already know, all of us, about the story of Samson's life. Samson was anything but a role model for what a judge ought to be. God used him, we're going to see that, but he was the least of the judges when it came to his personal character and his personal relationship with God, at least as far as what's recorded for us to read. So, we're going to start with the best, and then we'll start on the slippery slope heading down. All right, so chapter 3, verse number 1, begins as such. Now, these are the nations which the Lord left to prove Israel by them, even as many of Israel as had not known all the wars of Canaan. So, what we're about to see then are some of the groups of people, the tribes of people that were in the land, the inhabitants of the land when they arrived after leaving Egypt 40 years before this. This is not by any means an exhaustive list of the different tribes of Canaanites that were in the land. We'll see some others throughout the Old Testament mentioned by name, but these are the dominant tribes of the Canaanites that lived in the land. Verse 2, only that the generation of the children of Israel might know to teach them war, at the least such as before knew nothing thereof. What God is saying here is that this generation of Israelites, they didn't even know how to fight. They didn't know anything about war, because as Joshua died, and the generation that had been children in the days of Joshua, they eventually died also. And the new generation that grew up, they didn't know anything about war because their parents didn't do what they were supposed to do in continuing to rid the land of the inhabitants. So this younger generation grows up now not knowing anything about war. And so, consequently, God's going to teach them to war, but it's not going to be on their terms, it's going to be on God's terms. And he's going to use the Canaanites to teach them how to war, even though it's not going to be a pleasant experience. Verse 3, namely, five lords of the Philistines. All right, look at your map if you have it in front of you there. Brother Jim, you all have a map back there? All right. The Philistines, of course, lived in that strip of land in the southern part of the land of Israel, in the area that was apportioned to Judah. But they're in that strip of land along the Mediterranean coast. You see on your map it says Philistines in a lighter print there. The Philistines lived in an area that today is still a hotbed of contention in the Middle East. It's called the Gaza Strip. And the residents there are still, some of them, the descendants of the Philistines. And then you have, of course, the modern-day Israeli nation there that comprises that land. But there's still a great problem between the two. The Philistines, it specifically tells us here there were five lords of the Philistines. That's because there were actually five major city-states on the coast there that were city-states of the Philistines. They had five cities, and they were a confederation together, and those five major city-states dominated that area along the seacoast. And so when the tribe of Judah and Simeon try to together drive out the Philistines, they were not successful. And because they eventually gave up on the effort to drive them out, the Philistines are going to begin to be a major player for the next 300 to 400 years of Israel's history because they did not finish the job in driving out the Philistines. Of course, you and I know that even after the time of the judges is over, 400 years later, when David becomes, well, when David comes on the scene and Saul is king, you know the Philistines are still somewhat a dominant power there in the southern part of the land because Goliath is a Philistine. So we're going to see the Philistines even after the period of the judges is over, all because they didn't drive them out. All right, here's the next group, and all the Canaanites. Now, the term Canaanites, of course, refers specifically to those who were the descendants of Canaan. Now, let's take just a moment to address who Canaan is. Who genealogically are we talking about when we say Canaan? Who was he? And where does he fit in the family tree of the nations of the world? Who's Canaan? All right, let's, we won't turn there, but if we went back to Genesis chapter 10, Genesis 10 is the table of nations. It tells us of Noah's three sons that came off the ark with Noah, because from those three sons sprang all the different nations of the world. So, Noah had three boys. He had Shem, Ham, and Japheth. For the most part, you can, for the simplification of things, Japheth becomes the father of most of the European peoples, and they spread northward and westward. There's going to be a lot of overlap, but for the most part, that's where the descendants of Japheth move after the flood, at least after the Tower of Babel. The descendants of Shem are going to move north and eastward into the areas of Asia. The descendants of Ham are going to move southward and westward, primarily into the area of North Africa and beyond. Now, this is a very simplified description of where their tribes, their groups settled, but it gives you a ballpark idea. But there in the Middle East, the reason it is still the hot spot of the world today, 4,000 years after the flood, is because that's where they all started. And even though they spread to all the different parts of the world, there was a great overlap right there in what is what we today call the Middle East. So you have some of the descendants of Japheth in the Middle East, some of the descendants of Ham, some of the descendants of Shem, all there in the Middle East. That's why all the contention still exists in the Middle East. It's not predominant one group or the other. Shem is, of course, the lineage from which the Israelites come. We're going to see this morning, he's also the father of some of the other people in the book of Judges that are related to the Israelites. But this son Ham, the second son, the middle son, Ham is the father of Canaan. Canaan was his son, one of the sons of Ham. And Canaan is especially a problem for Israel and all the other nations because if you'll remember, after the flood was over, when Noah and the family came off the ark, Ham was the son that committed a great transgression of disrespect against Noah, against their father. And consequently, in the book of Genesis, God pronounces a judgment upon Ham through his son, Canaan. From that point on, the Canaanites, the sons of Canaan and all of his descendants, they become, I guess for lack of a better way of explaining it, they become further away from God than the rest of the people in the world after the flood. The Canaanites become the most wicked, the most pagan, the most immoral, not only in their everyday living, but in their religious worship of the false gods that they worshiped. These are the people that are the primary inhabitants of this land. Consequently, that's why God told the Israelites to drive them out of the land. They were the most wicked people in the ancient world. So the Canaanites, when the Bible tells us here in chapter 3, verse 3, the Canaanites, it comprises a whole bunch of smaller tribes that make up the Canaanites that live in the land. And we're going to see some of them in just a moment. And some of them you can see in other parts of the Old Testament. Let's continue on. Besides the Canaanites that lived in the land here, it says, and the Sidonians. Now, the Sidonians is also the same as Zidonians. Sometimes you see it spelled with a Z. They are the people that live to the north of Israel, up in what is today modern Lebanon. If you look on your map, and the very northern part of the portion that's shown on our map, it says Sidonians. Their two main cities were Tyre and Sidon. They were coastal cities, and those are the people that in world history we know as the Phoenicians. They were a sea-going people. They were very famous. They were probably some of the earliest merchants to sail all over the Mediterranean world. Consequently, they became very wealthy. Their two main cities there, Tyre and Sidon, were known for the huge walls around their port cities on the coast. The Phoenicians are also the ones that started colonies all over the Mediterranean world, including along the coast of North Africa, which is where the city of Carthage got its start. The city of Carthage that you later read about as the main rival of the Roman Empire was actually a colony of the Phoenicians or the Sidonians. So this is the group of people that we see here in the land that are just to the north of Israel, but they're going to be a problem for Israel too. Then it says, and the Hivites that dwelt in Mount Lebanon from Mount Baal Hermon unto the entering in of Hamath. This group of people, the Hivites, they are either another sub-tribe of the Canaanites, or some Bible scholars say they and the Hittites are the same people. Now, they're going to be mentioned in addition to the Hittites just a couple of verses down as a different group of people. So maybe they're not the same as the Hittites, or maybe they're a subgroup of the Hittites. The Hittites were the people that lived to the north of Lebanon, up in what is today the modern country of Turkey, Asia Minor. Does anyone remember anything from your world history days about the Hittites, what they're known for in ancient history? They're known for one thing in particular more than anything else. Anybody know what it is? Brother Sean, you're our history scholar. The Hittites were known for being the first to widely use iron weapons. And the Hittites, actually, we know from world history as well as Bible history, they actually not only invaded the land of Canaan here on our map, they continued farther south and even conquered Egypt at a later point because of their use of iron weapons, especially iron chariots that were formidable on the battlefield. All the other people were using chariots made of wood at the time, which were nothing compared to the Hittites who came in with iron chariots rolling through. They were like tanks on the ancient battlefield rolling through. And so the Hivites may have been connected to the Hittites. We really don't know. They could have just been another sub-tribe of the Canaanites. But continuing on, verse 4, "And they were to prove Israel by them, to know whether they would hearken unto the commandment of the Lord, which he commanded their fathers by the hand of Moses." Now, that commandment that God gave to Moses was, number one, they were to have no other gods before him. But then, also, they were to drive out the inhabitants of the land. So, those commandments, specifically the commandment to have no other gods before me, the very beginning of the Ten Commandments, God is going to test the children of Israel, because God's not going to drive these people out for them. They're left here. So they're living right along beside and right in amongst people that are worshiping false gods. So God's test on Israel is, all right, you're living amongst a bunch of pagans. Are you going to continue to worship me as the true and living God? Or are you going to fall into idolatry and worshiping false gods? He's going to prove them. He's going to test them. You and I know, I think, how Israel's going to fare in the test. They're not going to fare too well. But you know, it's not too awfully different than the situation in which Christians in America find ourselves today. I know arguably we could have said in generations gone by, America was a Christian nation, and those who weren't Christians in America, they lived in and amongst a bunch of Christians. But now we find Christians becoming fewer and fewer, a smaller and smaller percentage of the population. I mean true Bible-believing Christians. We find ourselves in the same situation, living in and amongst a bunch of pagans, worshiping false gods or goddesses, even if it's just man himself. I think God is proving us, testing us today, the church. Will we be faithful to Him? And will we teach our children from generation to generation to stay worshiping the true and living God? And I don't know that we're faring any better in America as Christians than Israel did in the Old Testament. In fact, it's taken us less time to fall away, perhaps, than it did the children of Israel. So maybe we shouldn't be too harsh in our judgment of Israel, because the church in America is not doing too much better, I'd have to say. I don't know, maybe you're a little more optimistic than I am at this point. I don't think there's a whole lot of room for optimism as far as where we have come to, but of course the future could be different. Verse 5, "And the children of Israel dwelt among the Canaanites." Again, that's the broad name for all these Canaanite tribes in the land. Then he names the Hittites, we just talked about, to the north, coming down from Turkey, and Amorites, and Perizzites, and Hivites, and Jebusites. All right, now I'm going to tell you just a little bit about those four groups. I won't bore you with a whole lot, but I want you to have a little bit of background. The Amorites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites, all of them, with the possible exception of the Hivites, were sub-tribes of the Canaanites, the descendants of Canaan. His children would have been subsets, sub-tribes, of the group of people known as Canaanites. But they're all Canaanites. The Amorites are probably the most well-known in history of all the different Canaanites. The Amorites lived in particularly in different parts of the mountainous areas of the land of Israel. We also know from the Old Testament that down there in the tribe of Judah, in their territory, you see Mount Hebron. That's the area, that's the mountain that Caleb and his sons took. Well, there's a valley that runs, you can see it on the map, a river valley that runs just south of Mount Hebron in Judah, all the way to the Mediterranean Sea. That valley I preached a message on that several months ago. It was referred to in the Bible as the Valley of the Giants, the Valley of the Rephaim. And the Amorites who lived there, and the Amorites who lived on the east side of the Jordan River, we are told were giants. Now, you remember when the 12 spies went to spy out the land 40 years before Israel ever crossed the Jordan? They came back and they said, "We are as grasshoppers in their sight." There were some giants living in the land. The Bible mentions some of them by name. The ones that lived on Mount Hebron were the Anakim, the sons of Anak, who were all giants. The Amorites also had two kings, Og and Sihon, who were both called giants in the Bible. In fact, we're told in the Bible that Og's bed was 12 to 15 feet long. So that was a big man. Most of our beds are about 6 foot long. If this fellow is sleeping on a bed between 12 and 15 feet long, he must have been a pretty good-sized man. The Rephaim, the giants. So the Amorites had a lot of giants that lived in the land. The Amorites were also the ones that had left this area and invaded Mesopotamia, the land between the Tigris and Euphrates rivers, to the east on your map, the land that is today the modern-day Iraq, and they are the ones who are responsible for the first kingdom of Babylon that we have in ancient history. That's the Amorites. They built a city and a civilization where Nimrod had previously built the city and Tower of Babel. They built a new kingdom called Babylon, but that was the Amorites. They were a very warlike people. The Perizzites and the Hivites, probably just subcategories, sub-tribes of the Canaanites. And also so were the Jebusites. But the Jebusites, what we know most about them from Bible history, the Jebusites were the ones that inhabited one city in particular, and it's an important city. Does anybody know what one important city in the land was inhabited by the Jebusites? It's the city of Jerusalem. The original inhabitants of Jerusalem were the Jebusites. And in fact, Jerusalem was inhabited by the Jebusites far, far earlier than this period of history. If we go all the way back to the history of Abraham, Abraham paid tithes to the king and high priest of God who lived in the city of Salem, which was Jerusalem, Salem of the Jebusites, Salem of the Jebus. And so the Jebusites had lived in Jerusalem for 1,000 years before this. So we're seeing some of the people that Israel is going to have to deal with because they didn't drive them out. So what did we accomplish this morning? Well, this morning we saw all these different groups of people that Israel didn't drive out and are going to be a problem for the rest of the book of Judges. It's a good foundation for us because we're going to see these different groups over and over again. Now you'll know who they are and what part they play. These people and their idolatry will be the downfall of Israel. Maybe we should say Israel's failure to do what God said and drive them out is the real downfall of Israel.